is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing.
And I am back with my next guest. And this is going to be fun because I have a love-hate relationship with lawyers. And he's a lawyer. I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, William Lande. It's his first visit to Joy on Paper, and it's not going to be his last because I know he's writing. Hi, William.
Are you there? I'm here. How are you?
Okay. Do you like to be called William or Bill?
Bill is fine.
Okay. I thought you sounded like a Bill. Well, maybe then this is psychological, probably. As I mentioned, I have this love-hate relationship with lawyers, and I love lawyers who become authors. I just had last week Steve Barry on, and of course, as you know, he was a lawyer for 30 years. Of course, the wonderful thing is, being a lawyer, you really learn how to use words, and then when you decide to use your cases as a jumping start for a book, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's one of the reasons that lawyers make such natural writers, and that transition happens often. It's not just that you're good with words, but the cases that are crossing your desk give you material. It's the stuff of fiction, and it's right in front of you.
Exactly. And all those characters that you meet along the way, especially in your case, of course, you were a district attorney. So you came across a lot of strange characters.
Well, that's for sure. And you certainly do draw on that. I would caution, though, that I'm always careful about not drawing on actual cases too closely. I always feel that the victims of crimes never volunteered to be in the public eye. And so I don't like to victimize them twice. So while you do draw on your experience, I try never to draw on specific cases if I can avoid it.
And also, you don't want to be sued by another lawyer. Because they will.
Very true.
Very true. You know it. As I said, I have this love-hate relationship. I went through a terrible lawsuit once. Well, twice. But
Yes.
That's why I'm here in Florida, on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of California, because I got involved in a lawsuit. But maybe we'll get back to that after we talk about your wonderful new book, All That Is Mine, I Carry With Me. Well, you know, when you wrote Defending Jacob, that came out before I started Joy on Paper. I would have had you on for that one because it won so many awards, and it was really great. So I'm so happy that you're finally here on Joy on Paper with this new book. So tell us about it.
So the book is about, it's about another criminal case involving a family from the same Boston suburb where Defending Jacob is set. And to some extent, it's a mirror image of Defending Jacob. Defending Jacob was about parents and their anxiety about not knowing and not understanding their child. This is a book about children not knowing and maybe not trusting their own father. So a young girl, 8 years old, comes home from school one day in the 1970s to find her mother missing. Her father is a criminal defense attorney and immediately becomes a suspect in this woman's disappearance. But the case essentially goes unsolved. There's no evidence. And so the book is really about the long shadow of this case and the toll it takes on this family, especially the children.
And
I'll leave it there because I don't want to add too many spoilers.
That's a problem with this. You've laid the premise out. We know what there's going to be a lot of things happening, layers of with the children, layers with the father, layers with the policeman involved, layers. There are these wonderful layers, and then you get to play around with them.
Yes, and in fact, it's a very untraditional crime novel. It's about a case that does not get solved, which defies the conventions of the genre, which is generally about detectives of one kind or another running around, gathering up clues, and then at the end of the story, solving the crime, which is satisfying, but which there's only so much you can do with at this point. So this is about doubt. It's about not knowing, which is very true to the experience of actual crime. I do find that the crime novels tend to get a little repetitive, and there's only so much you can do to breathe life into the genre at this point. So this is really a genre-bending kind of book. It's told in a fragmented, inventive way, and it's really about the relationships of this family. I always say that I'm not a crime novelist. I don't write crime novels. I write novels that happen to be about crime. To me, my books are really family dramas and human dramas, and that's really where my interest lies.
Definitely family dramas. And one of your main characters who comes into the story and sort of brings it about, tell us about Philip Solomon.
Philip Solomon is a writer who bears a striking resemblance to William Landay. He is a writer who has had success but hasn't been able to. He says that he is not blocked, but for one reason or another, he came to write. And so the book opens from Bill Landay, and the idea of putting a character in there who resembles the author so closely is to lean into the realism of the novel and the authenticity. I want readers to have a sense that this book and this story is so real and so honest that there must be elements of truth about it. I think we live in a moment when everybody is so skeptical and so cynical about the misinformation that's around, that it's very hard for us to dive into a novel the way we might have been able to once. So one way, I think, to address that and to meet the modern reader where she is to present a book that is honest and that feels too real to ignore. And so that's one thing that I'm trying to address.
I think it works.
And
he,
thank you.
You know, drew us into the story, made a compelling reason for us to continue reading, for us to discover about the people involved. And as you said, it's difficult nowadays with everything going on in the world. And you wrote this, you must have been writing this in the pandemic period and, you know, all of that. And we're all crazy at the time anyway. And we still haven't recovered from it. It's like this lingering thing. It is good, I think, to have something like this. In a way, it's better than what we're going through at the moment.
It's true. It's the pandemic. It's the political instability. It's the media instability. It's also just the fact of this technology, these phones that are in our pockets that are pinging all day and that are flooding us with information in short bursts that trains us to surf and to skim and makes it very difficult for us to focus. We have kind of a fragmented, frantic attention span at this point. And novels, unfortunately, demand a kind of sustained focus that is more and more difficult to muster these days. And so it's not just the voice of the book, it's the way the book is structured, which invites the reader to participate in a very active way in reconstructing the story and to engage with the book. It really relies on the reader's skill in putting these puzzle pieces together. It's a book that is laid out for you in pieces, like a jigsaw puzzle, and trust the reader to assemble those pieces. And there's a kind of pleasure in that as well. Some of the best reading experiences that I've had are books that are built this way. I think of Ian McEwan's Atonement in particular, a book that was also told in sections like this and allowed the reader to put the pieces together and to feel that satisfaction of reconstructing the story herself.
Oh, I like the way you're using herself.
Okay. Well, we have to be honest. Most novel readers are women, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I don't know about, is it most now? I think for women who read this, and you're right, I mean, I think it's the entire family idea of what, you know, you're a mother and a mother disappears. That right away just invites women to read this novel and to imagine who did it or who didn't do it or what's going on, and carry the reader along with that underlying theme always of what happened to mommy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's one anxiety that every parent feels, is what would happen to my family if something were happened to me. And it's also true that all mothers were daughters at one point, and we all have shared the experience of either losing a parent or growing apart from a parent, if only in the sense that we grow up and we come to regard our parents as fellow adults, and we come to see our mothers and fathers as whole people with all the flaws and all the strengths that every complex person has. And that is what growing up is all about, and it's one thing that makes parent-child relationships so complicated and makes growing up complicated. And so in this book, what you have is the story of children who literally lose their mother, but we all have felt something like that just as a normal part of growing up in an ordinary way. And so even though this may seem like a very dark and very unusual story, in a way, it addresses a universal anxiety and a universal experience. And I think that readers are going to find this story very accessible and very relatable, even if they have no experience in crime or criminality. This is it's like Defending Jacob, a story that is only superficially about crime and is really much more about people and families and relationships.
Exactly. And I wanted to mention also, I liked what you did with the detective, Detective Glover. I liked the nuance. Usually we don't get a lot of nuance with the detective, so I liked that.
Yeah, he's the opposite of the cliche, hard-bitten noir detective. He's a sensitive guy, and like a lot of cops that I've known, in murder cases in particular, they care. They care deeply, and they form attachments to the families that are involved in these cases, and especially to the victims, even though the victim in a murder case, by definition, can't be known. Detective Glover, in this case, is committed in his heart to this case and to this victim. And even as the case stretches over years and years and years, he never lets go. And that, I think, is probably a more common experience than we non-cops are aware. There are, of course, hard-bitten detectives and cops out there, but there are people who feel the job in their heart as well.
Oh,
and
I think
that's one of the things that makes it demanding.
I think there are more like Detective Glover. They carry the cases, some of the cases, what they have to see, what they have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why they are sensitive people. And so that's why I really enjoyed his character. I thought you did a great job with him.
Thank you.
I always like, as I said, I love talking to lawyers when I'm at the microphone.
lawyers who are off duty.
That's definitely off duty. I couldn't take another lawsuit for anything because my lawyer was just out of law school.
Oh,
that was funny. And I think, you know, when you're just out of law school, it's not really a good idea to take on a case where you're facing nine lawyers from a movie company.
Oh my goodness! I'm sorry to hear it.
Yeah, that was a a rookie mistake on my part and on his part. although probably now, you know, I'm not talking to him anymore. Maybe he's probably on the other side of the conference table now. He's one of the guys wearing the Italian loafers with no socks and
No, where I live, it's very cold, so we wear socks.
Yeah, I was going to say you're not in Los Angeles, so you know that's you know when the first time it happened to me, and I realized that my goodness, the lawyer who was on the other side of the conference table, not only was wearing $3,000 handmade Italian loafers with no socks. And I knew I lost. My poor guy had a suit. I think he had just bought it from perhaps Sears. It was a funny experience. But I love lawyers, and I'm glad that not only do you make money as a lawyer, you make money writing books. And
I'm retired as a lawyer. I haven't practiced law in 20 years.
Well, you're having fun, that's for sure. I can tell from your writing that as I said, when I get a book that's layered, I love it. And you've definitely accomplished something with this book. And
yeah, well, thank you.
You know,
my view has always been that the law and crime are really just prisms to look at human nature. And so these aren't books that are primarily about lawyers. They're just books that use the criminal cases as a way to dramatize experiences that we all know and that we all share.
Well, I think you've done a great job with this book, and it is called All That Is Mine I Carry With Me. And your characters, they all carry part of this story along in a fascinating way. As you said, it is, I think the readers will enjoy what I experienced, really working it out myself, what I thought and how I thought about it. So I'm really, really happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. And it's William Landay, right? And where you have a website, social media. Where do you want people to find you?
Well, the best place to start is williamlanday.com. Its last name is Landay. And you'll find all the information about all my books there, including links and everything you need.
And definitely, after they get this book, go back and read Defending Jacob. And again, Bill, it was wonderful to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye.